Mavis Staples of the Staples Singers, as you know, with Hard Times, Come Again, No More, a very appropriate song for our times right now. The song was written by pioneer songwriter Stephen Collins Foster in 1854 and is part of an album that Staples dedicated to Foster in 2004 titled Beautiful Dreamer, The Songs of Stephen Foster. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, well, what do you know? There is news. You know, after a while, I had the reason to remind people. I kind of know the nuances of news. And when we talked about earlier this week about not U.S., but State Attorney General Letitia James taking action against three opioid distributors, I did say there's something more to this story. And I tried to elicit from listeners what they thought that might be, what could this possibly be the precursor of. And lo and behold, we got the answer yesterday. Because a federal bankruptcy judge conditionally approved of a multi-billion-dollar settlement for OxyContin, the manufacturer of OxyContin. And we're going to talk about, is this justice? Something is happening here. And we should take a look at it. Don't ignore this case. This is a very significant case because it has ramifications literally across a wide spectrum. And there are things that we need to pay attention to because something dramatic is happening or being caused to happen. On the heels of an announcement by New York Attorney General Letitia James that three opioid distributors, McKesson Corp., Cardinal Health Inc., and Amerisource, Bergen Drug Corp., there is an agreement announced yesterday that a multi-billion, let me just make that clear right up front, a multi-billion dollar agreement to pay toward opioid abatement in the Empire State after negotiating a settlement in a decades-long lawsuit. A federal bankruptcy judge announced yesterday that this major league multi-billion dollar settlement is perhaps one of the biggest settlements in the world. And I'll read you how the story was covered by the Associated Press. So I'm not making anything up. So here goes. Let me just find my page here. It is, as I said, reported by the Associated Press. A federal bankruptcy judge gave conditional approval Wednesday to a sweeping settlement that will remove the Sackler family from ownership of OxyContin, maker Purdue Maker Purdue Pharma, and devote potentially $10 billion to fighting the opioid crisis that has killed a 500,000 Americans over the past two decades. If it withstands appeals, the deal will resolve a mountain of 3,000 lawsuits from state and local governments, Native American tribes, unions, and others that accuse the company of helping to spark the overdose epidemic by aggressively marketing the prescription painkiller. Under the settlement, the Sacklers will have to get out of the opioid business altogether and contribute $4.5 billion. But they will be shielded from any future lawsuits over opioids. The drug maker itself will be reorganized into a new charity-oriented company with a board appointed by public officials and will funnel its profits into government-led efforts to prevent and treat addiction. It goes on. The story goes on, but I didn't want to, let me read a little bit more. Maybe there's merit to that. Also, the settlement sets up a compensation fund that will pay some victims of drugs an expected $3,500 to $48,000 each. After an all-day hearing in which he analyzed the plan's pros and cons for a nonstop 6.5 hours, U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Drain said he would approve it as long as two relatively small changes were made. If so, he said, he will formally enter the decision on Thursday. He said that while he does not have fondness for the Sacklers or sympathy for them, collecting money from them through lawsuits instead of a settlement would be complicated. The deal comes nearly 2 years after the Stanford, Connecticut-based company filed for bankruptcy under the weight of lawsuits. Okay, that pretty much summarizes it. There's much more to the story, but you got the gist of it, and you got the sense of it from what I've read. Okay, so something is happening. Something is happening. And now it comes to you. We talked about the previous case. Here, on the heels of it, is this case. Now, you tell us what is happening from your perspective at 888-874-4888. And while you're at it, answer the question, please, the big question. Is this justice? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Is this justice or is this something else? Let us hear from you. And I want analysis. Analysis. Don't give me back what I just read to you. Internalize the information. Marry it with other things that you know and that we have discussed, and come up with something of a scenario that helps us understand from your unique perspective what you think is happening here. Ah, up first is Ed from Queens. Hello, Ed, you're on the air. Ed, you're Hello? On the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can barely hear you.
Hello, can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can.
How you doing? We're here drying out from the biblical deluge we experienced last night. That's another story entirely. I called at the tail end of yesterday's show with some information that I had from my personally I acquired from following this case. And, you get to cut straight to the point, it's a deal. It's a deal among the oligarchies, the oligarchs and the plutocracy that runs this country. It's not justice. There were millions of people that died from this opioid scandal. The Sackler family knew about it. They knew the propensity for the opioid concoction that they derived in their labs, and they knew of its fondness for addiction. And they presented, if you read the Sackler's depositions, because this thing has been going on since 2018, 2019. In the Sackler's depositions, one of the Sackler brothers, I believe, Robert Sackler, all but admitted the fact that, yes, we knew that this drug was addictive. We knew the consequences and the side effects of it, and we pushed it. And we told our salespeople to push it, i.e. through Purdue Pharma. So when Letitia James and a group of attorneys generals, a statewide group of from multiple states, brought this case against all of these players from the Sackler family to Purdue Pharma to Cardinal to distributors, there were several complainants listed as defendants in this case. And there have been negotiations going on in the back door. Specifically, dealing with Letitia James, through my research, I know a lot of these companies, some of these pharmaceutical companies like Cardinal, like Purdue Pharma, like Rensselaer, they donate heavily to New York City and New York State campaign. And it's better to give a little in the profit margin, which was calculated by the Sackler family, to the money they would make as far as the fines they would pay out, like a cost, a risk-benefit analysis they take on these things, and make a deal. And they shouldn't have been, my personal opinion is they shouldn't have been allowed to do that. They should, specifically the Sackler family, based on the depositions, should do some jail time, some heavy jail time, for the hardship that they caused. But, this is, like I said, politics and money have an incestuous relationship, and it's too deep to even try to cut into it. But yeah, this is a cop-out. These guys, they're giving up billions of dollars here, billions of dollars there. But believe me, their books are still covered. And even though the Sackler family will no longer be involved in the production of any type of pharmaceuticals, they haven't lost the billions of dollars that they made from OxyContin. And they haven't lost their fortune. They're still solvent. They're not going to the poorhouse.
So you don't think that this is justice?
No.
Justice, from what you have said, justice is somebody doing some heavy jail time.
Yes.
However, this was not a criminal case.
It never reached that point because as soon as the case was brought, before it even came out of anything, negotiations were started. It was a federal bankruptcy court. There were mediators, even with Letitia James' deal with the distributors, Cardinal and the other ones. That was being mediated in 2019. There was never any intention to bring these people on criminal charges. If you read the Sackler's deposition, I mean, the audacity, the unmitigated gall. This guy Robert Sackler basically admitted that yes, we knew this stuff was addictive. And we, it was like he was selling crack. We knew this stuff was addicted. We knew the side effects, and we told ourselves people to push it as such. You know how many doctors, how many pharmaceutical reps got vacations and bank deals? You got to read the deposition. And anybody belongs in jail as a Sackler at the beginning of this.
But we have two now. We have the highest law enforcement person in the state of New York, Letitia James, and we have the decision by, well, calling it a conditional decision, but it's pretty much a fait accompli that the Sacklers have not committed a crime. This was not a criminal case. Could anything be done about this, in your view?
Well, as it stands now, unfortunately, no, because the palms have been greased and the wheels have been set in motion. Like I said, from the inception of these charges, negotiations started back in 2019. So I don't believe that anybody was sincerely looking to hold anybody criminally culpable for anything. I believe it's about money. I believe it's, and Letitia James, no matter what, you know, she has a decent record as far as what the eye can see, but she's a politician and she's a New York politician. And we all know about New York politicians based on Andrew Cuomo, based on Bill de Blasio. I mean, you know, like it or not, she's an elected official, and elected officials need money to get elected. And let's see who donates to her campaign, because we know that the Attorney General's office is a springboard, possibly for the governor, possibly for other offices. Let's keep our eyes and see who's donating to who and where the money's coming from and where the money's going.
But even in light of the enormity of the impact, very conservatively, it is said that more than 500,000 people died as a result of this. There's nothing that they suffer, the makers of this drug, and in fact, they've been pretty much given a pass. Just pony up the money, and we see that you get out of the door without even a scratch.
I mean, look how the whole thing was reported. Look how it was coached. Look how it was couched. No one ever explicitly looked at the hardship that these drugs caused. No one looked at the individual lives that were destroyed. It's always been about money. It's always been about settlement deals and bankruptcy courts. And no reporter outside of yourself, in my observation, has even brought up the fact that these people pushed a product to kill people and knew it full and well, and pushed it so much because they knew of its propensity to be addictive. That's not been made of light. There's been improprieties as far as distribution and improprieties as far as over-prescription and opioid this and that. But, you know, the real facts, or what I call the real facts, were never really brought to bear. And they were allowed to escape because life is cheap in America. I mean, as far as based on this perception, life is cheap. And if you got enough money, you can bury enough bodies.
But the brunt of this fell and still does fall on predominantly Black and Latino and poor people. They're the ones doing the dying. They're the ones doing the suffering. They're the ones being held under the yoke of addiction. And we don't see a clear-cut reason to look at this differently, not from a point of view of, oh, let's sit down and see if we can work something out. That means, you know, put some money in the kitty and let's see if we can move on beyond this. But this is an issue of justice. It's no less important than a program, or back in the day they called it a pogrom, to target and annihilate populations that were considered undesirable anyway. But that's what they did through these drugs? And why don't we have an outcry about it?
Like I said, life is cheap in America. I mean, the American people are not, they're not, I don't know if they're not apt enough or the intellectual level, the level of comprehension has been so degraded that people only pay attention to the money or pay attention to the cult of personality. You know what I'm saying? The poor always suffer. You know, even with the COVID, even with the COVID virus, the poor always suffer, and it's always brought out when studies or when people take a look at the statistics. It's always brought out that the poor always suffer, white, black, whatever. The poor always suffer, and until we get some type of movement where humanity is considered, we're always going to have these corporate monsters buy their way out of it, just like now.
Well, thank you so much for getting us started today and with such profound observations, which I hope we will continue to elaborate on, because this, to me, is a crime against humanity. It is not just about some people concocting a drug that is, you know, it has its downside. No, this was, you can say, intentionally inflicted on particular populations considered undesirable anyway, the calculation being that nobody is going to care about that. Nobody is going to care about them and their addictions and the rate at which they died. But we do know that in New York City, we had more than 500,000 people, most of them African American and Latino, but most of them also poor. And there isn't a whimper about what should happen, except that we're getting stories about the great ambitious plan for a fund to treat the future possible potential addicts. And in the meantime, the makers of these drugs and the distributors of these drugs go scot-free. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I want you, although, of course, you will have to do some more research and reading to properly acclimate yourself to this story. But it is a huge story, and we need to discuss not just the story itself, but the key players in the story and their attitudes toward justice. That's the issue. What is justice here? What do you say justice is here? Thanks so much, Ed, for getting us started the right way today. I appreciate your contribution. 888-874-4888. What we're looking at is how systems accommodate each other, and particularly when it involves vast amounts of money. Vast amounts of money. Lives don't matter. The health of individuals doesn't matter. The future of entire communities doesn't matter. You can get a judge to make a ruling that is favorable. And, you know, you just throw some money in a fund and you're done with it. You got away with it. You made tons, billions of dollars. And now, okay, so they caught you. But if you put a couple of billions into the pot and you say, well, we regret what we did, we're very sorry, make a phony act of contrition, and you get to go on with your life. 500,000 people don't get to do that. But as long as you throw some money in the pot and you talk about your charity organization and your devotion to the less fortunate, you can get the top, the highest law enforcement person in the state of New York to endorse your plan and to give you a free ride. Rich from New York, you're on the air.
Hello? Yeah, I'm on the air.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
hi.
Rich, you're on the air.
Well, you know, if you look back at this country, they have a long history of doing deals like this with large companies. Look at the savings and loan debacle that that bankrupt the country. Bankrupt the country during the Obama's year. Who did he blame for that savings and loan crisis? He said he didn't blame the banks for putting up fraudulent loans that people say, buy a house today, you won't have to make any payments on it for 5 years. He didn't blame the banks. He blamed people. He said it was caused by people taking out loans that they couldn't pay back. And the taxpayers paid that back. I paid it back, trillions of dollars.
But you are off the subject. I'm not discussing the savings and loan crisis.
I'm not discussing Obama. Okay.
Don't take us on a parallel track. We have a clearly defined target here. Stick with
it. Okay. What about the Johnson & Johnson putting asbestos and baby powders and all of these women
You're off the topic. Do you not recognize that?
Well,
on topic and be relevant. Otherwise, we'll talk to you another day. Today is not your day.
All right. Well, I'm just saying, like, I would say take the billions of dollars.
I know what you're saying. I've heard you. And I've said to you twice, you're off topic.
Well, you want to talk about the opioids? So let's talk about the opioids. I'm saying that look like to me would be best to take the billions of dollars and because, like, if you take this to trial, it'll probably take 10 years to get it settled. So, all right. So, thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. Zabby from New York, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, I'm making phone calls to our representatives to keep them accountable for many things, but I just wanted to be on topic right here and tell you that there is no justice for the individual. No justice for the individual. And this is going on, and the thing is that if you take the 500,000 people affected and you take the settlement and you divide how much per person you get $20,000, and of course, as you read, you'd get between as an individual $3,000 and $43,000. The average is $20,000 per each person that died. And the problem is that this court system, you cannot sue as an individual. What happens is these judges say, oh, well, we have this lawsuit and this lawsuit. We're going to combine them together instead of taking justice for each of us individually. And so there is no possibility of having your own private lawsuit and period and getting justice and having a jury. And so this whole system of justice is a sham because these companies are able to work with, as you said, the institution involved here, which in fact just says, oh, well, we'll just have one big settlement, but it is just a drop in the bucket.
You're right on top of it. That is it in a nutshell.
Thank you very
there
much.
There are ways in which they try to persuade the public, well, we're doing the right thing. We're on this. We are seeking justice. But this is no justice. This is no justice. Do you consider this justice?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And again, I'm still working for senior citizens. I've been calling, making calls. And as I say, I thank the fact that I heard Joe Biden say he's getting out of the this direction of making over countries and getting out and putting the foreign policy in a new direction. The people should be, he needs to now go further and take care of the people here in the United States. And we need to also reform this justice system. And we need to defund the military, and we need to find out what kind of judicial system we have here. The third branch of government is a sham.
Thank you very much for contributing today, Zabi. Thank you for your call. Patricia, you're on the air from New York.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope all is well.
Good afternoon to you.
I am going to disagree with you a bit. In terms of the ethnic population that was primarily affected by OxyContin, it was actually poor whites in rural communities. This actually has decimated Appalachia. And the whole reason that OxyContin became an issue to begin with was because the legislatures in Appalachia began to recognize that they had a problem. And when they evaluated the problem, OxyContin was the source. And it was only then that there became a public outcry about OxyContin. Black and brown folks didn't really get involved with OxyContin, first of all, because it was so difficult to get prescriptions. In order for you, I don't know, you know, historically, blacks have been told that they have a higher tolerance for pain. So historically, we have not been able to get pain management and pain relief to the extent that other communities have been able to. So we really didn't, when I say we, I'm talking about black and brown communities, didn't really get involved with OxyContin until the very end. And that's why you had such a proliferation of, I don't know if you saw on television, all of these drug treatment programs that were springing up around OxyContin. But if you looked at them, nobody that I knew could afford them because they were primarily targeting those high-end individuals who could get repeat prescriptions for OxyContin over and over again. However, that being said, justice only occurs when the person who is harmed is able to get individual and direct relief. And all this does is put money in the coffers of the state. And I see that a portion of this money is to go to addressing opioid victims. Well, really, you have 500,000 people who are dead. How is it going to affect them? How is it going to heal them? How is it going to bring justice to them? So you have 500,000 people who are dead. You have the families of 500,000 people who have been affected. Who is going to take care of them? So, you know, the last caller who talked about what the direct financial aid would be to individuals, that does not account for all the people who are in the ground. So what justice is people talking about?
I'm listening.
I'm sorry, that was a rhetorical question.
I'm listening to you. I'm listening to you because you are making profound sense. Profound. And you're right. you're right. In large cities like New York City, just to say, in large metropolitan areas, the racial shift did occur and has been pretty stabilized between Blacks and Latinos, I would say, in recent years especially. And the impact has been extraordinary, very damaging. Lots of life lost, lots of life interrupted and derailed. And we see the response that they have gotten, which is traditional. You know, let's get you some food stamps. Let's get you in a subsidized housing. Let's see if we can get your children in different schools. You know, let's put you in a program dealing with addiction. But here, the question we're raising is, it's not like people like Letitia James and others involved in this case don't know that. It is very much the case that they know what the impact has been, but they are purposely avoiding the ramifications of the drug distributors and the manufacturers, the impact, the direct impact on targeted communities, and what the result has been and continues to be. I believe we ought to hear something about the criminality of their actions, and not about whether they are able to afford contributions to a common fund of billions of dollars that would go into treatment. That is to me ridiculous. And I think they should be ashamed, the Letitia James and people of her ilk at that level, that they're not discussing what really happened here. You had the decimation of many communities by design. That, to me, ought to suggest some kind of criminality that should attach to these drug czars. And it would have happened if the issue were heroin. And yes, you know, people say, "Oh, yeah, we know who is responsible," and we ramp up the attacks on the people distributing heroin. But the fact that they are totally taking off the table any discussion of possible criminal indictments is just reprehensible to me.
You know, Utrice, they manufactured the drug, then they paid over $50 million to advertising companies to advertise to physicians to push them to prescribe the drug, to prescribe it to people who didn't even need it. If that's not criminal, I don't know what is. I mean, all the folks that made the cocaine, they got in trouble. The people who pushed it on the street, they got in trouble. How come they get away scot-free?
Good point. But what has to happen, you think, to move it to that point?
Like everything else, there has to be a public outcry. You know, this is being done amongst us, that circle, you know, of hierarchy. You sit around the table and everybody's nice and polite, and you know, this is like a negotiation. But the people who are harmed and the people who are affected are not at the table to say, this is what about us? And actually, how many people even know about this? The fact that we're talking about it is because you raised it. I didn't know about it because I don't follow the news. So here again, the public at large doesn't know about this. So where's the outcry supposed to come from when people are not even aware and informed?
Good point. Good point. Thank you, Patricia. You always can be depended on to add insight to a burning question or issue. And you did it again today. Thank you. Rose from New York, you're on the air.
I know you're not going to like what I have to say, but I want to say it anyway. I don't hold the drug manufacturers responsible. I think painkillers are a wonderful thing. I think that...
Hold it a second. Hello, Rose. Hold it a second. How dare you start by assuming, I know you wouldn't like what I have to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. What is this, a dare? You're having a conversation. I know you wouldn't like what I have to say. Based on what?
So I take that back. But anyway, I think that painkillers are a great...
No. It's not you take it back. You apologize.
I apologize, Patrice. What I meant to say, well, not what I meant to say, what I should have said, had I been thinking more clearly, was most of your listeners probably will not like what you have to say, what I have to say. I know that you, Patrice, are actually...
There you go again.
You like to hear contrary opinions. So you probably will.
Have you done a study? Have you conducted a canvassing?
No, that's right. Most people wouldn't like that. You like contrary opinions. You said that many times yourself, so I take that back. I was thinking more of most of your listeners based on the calls so far. Can I go on?
I'm trying to tell you that is a rotten way to think.
You're right.
When you start off,
I stand corrected, and I apologize.
By presuming you know people's minds better than they do.
Well, no, by the callers. The callers. Again,
so
the fact that I said
nobody
it
has,
about you.
Nobody has control, including me. I don't have control of who wishes to call and who wishes not to call. But I'm cautioning you that this very thing that you're doing is so wrong, and yet it is done so casually.
Okay,
all over the
point
place.
Taken. I was being glib and wrong, and I apologize, Patrice, and I stand corrected.
All right, apology accepted, but proceed.
All right, Patrice, I think that, you know, painkillers are a wonderful thing, and I do not hold drug companies responsible for manufacturing them or for giving them to clinics and all that stuff. Now, I do hold responsible doctors who, when they know that their patients are no longer in pain, let's say they had dental surgery or they broke a bone, you do need painkillers, or some people do, for a period of whatever, 2 weeks, however long it takes. But once the doctor says, hey, that bone is all healed, you're not in pain anymore, you're not getting any more painkillers, that is on the doctor if he or she is prescribing them. That's number one. Number two is, you know, I don't have as much empathy for a lot of these drug addicts. I think that if you are taking a painkiller because
you're way off topic. We're not discussing the personal habits or thoughts of people addicted to drugs, because we will end up smack in the White House for several terms.
Right, but it's relevant insofar as people saying they should be getting a part of the sentence. I don't think they should be.
We are very clear about what our purpose is today. We're discussing the fact that this is the second major settlement that has been worked out, involving drug manufacturing and drug distribution companies that are, I would say, central to the horrible experiences we have had with lots and lots and lots of damage in communities, people who were sidelined, people, more than 500,000 people dead.
That is the fault, not of the drug or the drug manufacturer.
I'm not interested in whose fault it is. I'm interested in the fact that we are supposed to have a better counting and a better regulation of the pharmaceutical companies. We're supposed to have that. And it has, in fact, been reported many times. Only one of us could talk at a time. Only one of us could be talk and be understood at a time. So that is what we're discussing. I don't want to know whose fault it is that people took more drugs than they should have. People take more aspirins than they should. So it's that is not the issue. The issue is, how is it that completely absent from this particular development is any discussion of criminal prosecution?
There shouldn't be any criminal prosecution because there is no criminal or wrong with manufacturing painkillers. There are millions of human beings in acute, severe pain who need painkillers to live. And the fact that doctors are also giving painkillers to people who don't need them, that is criminality on the part of the doctor, not
okay,
on the part of the manufacturer.
You have a situation. It doesn't matter who is primarily responsible. The fact is, it is known that this is an inherent problem. It is known that this accounts for a lot of shenanigans going on in the pharmaceutical industry. It is known. So how is it that it reached a point where 500,000 people, that's sometimes, you could say it's the larger than the population of many small countries.
And I just, they're so bored with their lives or destitute or depressed that they say, well, let me continue with painkillers because it buses me out. And not only that, if you're in rural areas, there's cachet to being a drug addict. Now I'm aligned with the hipsters in Harlem or in New York City.
Oh, Lord.
Hold on for a second.
You are completely lost in the subject. You're overwhelmed by things that we're not discussing and that really are not the primary focus of this discussion. So hold on to your thoughts until we get there. We'll get there somewhere down the road. The immediate discussion that we're having is, we have a crisis and it has been managed in a particular way that raises major questions about whether justice was at the center of the decisions made by people, whether it was a court or whether it was the state attorney general of the state of New York, but it's been managed in a way that is extremely troubling. Thanks for calling in. Pamela, you're on the air from New Jersey.
Hi, you trees. Love you. Hope you're doing well.
I'm hanging in.
And that's good. Me too. And
that's good.
So when they filed for bankruptcy, I believe they should really go totally bankrupt and remove every penny they have and give it to the families that lost a family member. And all future money from these pharmaceutical companies go every future money of the one that sold the drug that killed the opiate that killed 500,000 people, every future money from these pharmaceutical companies go to the family of the people that are died. And that's a good idea, that to put the manufacturers and the drug company people in jail, because the manufacturers need to learn to look into what they're manufacturing and if it's killing people. And I think they should go to jail too, along with the drug companies. And
they do it with people who are manufacturing heroin and processing cocaine. They hold them criminally responsible.
Well, that's a different story. But I was thinking for the drug companies to pay for a placard like for the dead of the Vietnam War, like those bronze placards have the names, birth and death and age of each person that died on a placard like that. And also the people that murdered these people on purpose because they knew they were dying. So that's first degree murder in my eyes. And they should be forced to get out of their mansions and live in a house that's no more than a $500,000 house. $500,000 for the 500 dead. 500,000 dead. And like I said, all future money they make go to the family of the people that died. But that's my idea of justice. That's how I think now. I didn't used to be this hard, but I am now.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for your contribution today. I appreciate your call. And that brings us to the end of our program today. This is a very serious subject, and it's hardly over. It is just starting. If we had people genuinely interested in justice handling this case, we would find a lot of doors opening so that we get a comprehensive view of what this industry is all about and its impact, despite the fact that most people don't know. But the impact these industries have and have had on the U.S. population. And it is something that must be undertaken because it is so closely linked, literally, to life and death in many parts of our country. Thanks so much for contributing today. Great ideas and thoughts, and we will keep track of where this case is going. It's a very, very important case, and we should not lose sight of it. Thanks so much again for calling in and participating in the program. We'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.